us.
To us?
Yeah. Why the hell not?
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 2, Episode 27, Psychotherapy. And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Tara and Dave. We have announcements.
So many. Hey.
We do. We'll try to be quick. First of all, thank you again to everyone who joined us for the Back in the High Life Again live tweet on the 4th to honor our very special 90210 book. We do not hate you all. We hope you do always talk to us again. Our chat with Linda Holmes, which went up right afterward, is now live on the ATX Festival's YouTube channel, and you will find that link in the show notes if you missed it or just want to watch it again.
Yes, and thank you to the ATX Festival, too. I forgot to put that in the doc. Again with this, our next Patreon episode, number 20, is dropping this Friday, October 16th. It is Let's Watch Tiffany Amber Thiessen on News Radio, specifically News Radio episode season 5, episode 15, which is available on iTunes, Amazon, Google Play, or if you have the Roku channel, you can watch it for free right there.
Indeed. Joe Reed, talking to you. But that is not all. That's new in our Patreon. Last week, we announced on our Twitter that if we hit $1,200 by October 20th, which we did today, thanks in large part to a very generously edited pledge from Scott J, we would add a new bonus feature. As you may have read on Tara's Twitter, among other places, Tori Spelling and Jenny Garth are launching their own episode recap podcast called 9021 OMG, basic, on November 9th. And while normally we wouldn't bother to acknowledge our competition because of you, we are committing to do Again With Them, an additional once-monthly digest episode recapping their recap show and giving our reactions to them. This will be available to Patreon supporters at the $5 level and above. So if this is something you would like to hear, get on board. If you're already a Patreon supporter under that level right now, you can edit your current pledge to make sure you get that episode next month. And the URL for all of that is patreon.com/againwiththis. Thank you for your support.
And if you donate $5.01, you get Again With There, Again With Them. The David T. Cole recap podcast of the Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting recap podcast of the 90210 Oh Mike OMG podcast. Yes, that's right.
Before we move on to this Melrose episode, when this came out, which they announced it on the actual anniversary of the show, which was, of course, on October 4th, my tweet was... before we decided that we would do this, which, by the way, we should give credit to Dave because it was his idea that we should do a recap.
And he named it.
He did.
Yeah.
My thought was I would be interested to check it out because it seems like from all outward appearances that Jenny Garth like has managed her money well and is having a very nice life. Whereas, as we know,
yeah,
Tori is only in the news when like the sheriffs are coming to her house because she hasn't paid her Amex bill. So like, it's going to be a real interesting dynamic between the two of them because Jenny will probably like not really care that much. Whereas Tori will be sweatily desperate to make a go of this. And by the way, it's an iHeartRadio podcast, so they were probably like a fair-sized dump truck of money was backed up to the two of them to get them to do this. You know, it's a going concern of a podcast company.
Yeah, they're getting paid no matter what their audience is. I'm sure they get more if there's more, but it's not like they're bootstrapping this or something.
Yes, but I was also DMing back and forth last night with Patrick Sullivan on Twitter, who became a supporter when I tweeted this out and then DM'd me and was like, well, this got me on board. I have to hear this. So I was like, I would really love to see the contract that they signed because it's so many episodes. Like, I think they might get bored before they finish.
Oh, they'll absolutely get bored. I can't imagine that they're going to do what we did.
Mate.
They're going to cull.
Oh, you think like what we did with the book? You think so?
Yeah.
I think they're going to be very short episodes. I think they're going to be like 15-minute kind of things. They're not going to be exhaustive. They're just going to be like, this is the episode where this, and here's a couple remembrances or something like that. Like, I mean, maybe they will go an hour on each. I don't know, but I don't see it.
Perhaps. But the other thing was like, when we were going back and forth, we were like, he posited a world where like Jenny pieces out at a certain point and then Tori keeps going. And I was like, oh my God, here's what's going to happen. Jenny's going to quit and Tori's going to replace her with Dean. This whole thing is just Jenny as a Trojan horse to get Tori's terrible husband paid, because otherwise he's not making any money. So let's all discover if that is what in fact happens with this project.
I really feel like we should do a big board like they have in bars for football picks and just pick like when, like what's the over under on Jenny quitting?
Yep.
Who is going to replace her temporarily while Tori acts like this wasn't a plan to get fucking turdly Dean in the in the door the whole time? How many episodes does Gabrielle Carteris do out of the kindness of her heart before being like, this is agony, fuck off? I mean, I guess we'll see.
Yeah. Anyway, you got all that for free. So go to patreon.com/againwiththis and join at the $5 level or edit your pledge if you're under that now to the $5 level. And we will start doing those late in November because their podcast doesn't start until November 9th. Now, on to this episode, starting with the C plot. Oh, peeping Ted's luck runs out. Oh, Ted. So we pick up back up with good old Ted. He is lurking in the courtyard, waiting for the coast to be clear before creeping back up to his old apartment. But instead of taking up his position behind the old peeping hole, he gets more ambitious and crawls up to the attic while Amanda putters around getting ready for bed. And this is the soundtrack that she is listening to, clip two.
And then Linus comes out and tells you the true meaning of Christmas.
Is Ted worse than jazz?
Yeah. So that was the sound of him being clumsy with the cover on the like attic hatch or whatever you call it. So Amanda hears and then turns off the radio so that she can hear what is actually going on above her. And no one minds, because what the fuck was that music? Good call clipping that, Sarah. And by the way, credit to Heather Locklear for in any way selling that that is what Amanda would listen to in her home, because we all know Heather Locklear was a metal chick in real life. Hello. Anyway, this is when we see that Ted already crawled up there before and cut a hole in the ceiling right above Amanda's bed. Apparently she decides nothing is amiss and just goes on with her business, which is to sit in the corner right underneath where Ted happens to conveniently be. And starts getting undressed. I don't know how he knows that she would choose that side of the bed to go to, but he did. So good job, Ted, I guess, with the peeping. Gross. But also, I don't know. He's good at it, I suppose.
I mean, yeah, I have a lot of logistical questions that don't matter at all. So, like, I mean, she never is looking at the ceiling?
Yeah.
Ever?
Yeah.
All right. You own the building.
Mm-hmm.
Is this just a homeowner thing where I'm always like looking for little bubbles in the paint? I was like, is that a spider? I mean, really?
It is strange.
Yeah. Anyway.
The next night, Joe and Amanda are going over prints in Amanda's dining room table, at Amanda's dining room table, when they both hear another weird clunk. And they follow the sound with Joe asking what's on the other side of the wall. Amanda says it's the bedroom in the apartment that's vacant, which it's a studio, as I recall. So it's all bedroom, but okay. And Joe says it's an old complex. It's probably just a rat. But then Ted puts the attic cover back really noisily again, and they both hear it again. And Amanda asks if Joe still has her gun, and Joe laughs that she does, but she's not going to use it on a defenseless rodent. And so she suggests that they go check it out. So they do. But instead of turning lights on, they go in with a flashlight. And Amanda's also carrying a golf club. Originally, I had in my notes with a putter, but thank you, Sarah, to the visual aids notes. Now I know it's a 9-iron. Thank you.
Pretty sure. Could also be a pitching wedge. Do not at me. I also noted this, that they didn't turn any lights on, like, that this is something that, like, cops would do so as not to, you know, disturb the integrity or whatever. But also, right. Is it possible that there's no power in that apartment because it's vacant?
Oh, maybe, I guess that's possible. But, like, he just moved out. It seems like it would be very sudden for them to have turned the power off already. It hasn't been a month, you know?
Yeah. Also, it's a TV apartment. Like, there's always power. Come on, guys.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing is that if they thought it was a person and they don't want a person to think that they're there, they wouldn't turn the light on. But if they think it's a rat, like, they wouldn't want a rat to know they're there. Like, none of it makes sense.
Well, or that a rat would scatter if the light is on. But do I rats, guess. I mean, I don't know.
That does make the golf club make more sense, though, if the rat theory is what you're going with, because then at least it would be like you're batting it out of the way.
Slicing
it.
Oh, I didn't even think. I just sort of, because we know it's a person, I totally forgot the rat theory. And now I'm just imagining them trying to bludgeon this poor rat. I mean, whatever. I had a pet rat. I'm that guy that I'm like, it's fine. They're just trying to live. Yeah. I know they're gross. I get it. But they're especially gross when they've been hammered into a paste with a golf club.
Well, I can tell you, the night after I
wrote
my notes for this episode, I was, Dave had gone to bed early. I was alone on the couch in the living room, and I heard a like weird little shuffling noise in the kitchen that at first I thought was the ice maker, and then it was not the ice maker. And I followed it. I couldn't figure out what it was. And then I realized it was like the weird cupboard that we never use above the like range hood in the kitchen.
Yeah, the one that's always split into two little mini cupboards you don't know what to do with. Yeah.
Yes. So,
I was like, okay, something is in there. If I go wake up Dave, he's going to be pissed off. But if I fling this cupboard.
Whoa.
What?
Well, that sounded a little.
No, because it was, you'd been asleep for 3 hours. It's like, no one wants to be awakened after 3 hours to like come and deal with whatever is in this cupboard. Okay. If it's a bird or
don't
something.
Don't say pissed off.
Okay. I would not be happy. If the position was reversed, I wouldn't be happy either if I was the one that was asleep.
But pissed off sounds like I'm pissed off at you.
No, pissed off at the situation.
Which I'm getting would pissed not off want right to now be having this conversation.
What if you woke Dave up to inform him that you hadn't woken him up in order to kill a giant spider?
Right. But the point being, like, I didn't know what it was. I thought, like, whatever was in there, it was a bird or a squirrel or a mouse or something. And as soon as I touched the door, like, I could hear the shuffling. And as soon as I touched the door and made, like, I was maybe going to open it, it stopped. And I was like, okay, something is in there. So I grabbed, like, the biggest chip clip that we had. Just held the two sides of the handles closed and, like, texted Dave so that he would see it in the morning if he got up before me. I was like, well, here's what happened. I figured... there was no good solution either waking you up or trying to deal with it by myself. Either way, you would wake up. So we can handle this in the morning. Goodbye.
Yeah. And for the record, there was a like a conduit hole drilled into the back of it. So yeah. I'm sure that's how whatever. I'm sure it was a mouse.
Whatever was in there, like found its way in and found its
God
way back
knows
out
what's
again.
Up in our attic right now.
Yeah.
I mean, we could it could be like a. That scene in Pee-wee's Big Adventure when the lights go up and you're surrounded by forest animals. Like, I can imagine myself opening the door to the attic and just peeking in there. It's just like a menagerie in there.
There's like a turkey in there.
Yes. Anyway, none of that happens in this. They don't find an animal or a Ted. They yank open a closet door. No one's in there. Ted has been wisely staying in the attic this whole time and listens while they turn around and they leave. So the next night, we see Amanda going through her apartment, turning off lights on her way to bed. At her place, Joe is doing the same. When she looks across the way and sees lights in the window at the vacant apartment, she picks up the phone to call Amanda. But by this time, Amanda's in the shower, so she doesn't hear it. And the now very bold Ted has just let himself in at Amanda's and is flashing the light around while Joe watches in horror. And then she goes running over without her gun, by the way. And I guess this is the first time I realized that all of the second floor units aren't connected by the same walkway, because she goes tearing down the stairs. And I was like, why doesn't she just run across? Because they're not connected. I didn't realize that. Anyway, this is not architecture talk. Ted hides in a closet while Joe pounds on the door and calls Amanda's name. Amanda finally comes to the door. Joe explains that she thinks there's someone in there. They both hear the clunk again. And so Amanda turns on the kitchen light, gets them each a huge knife from the block, and they go investigate. And this time when they yank open the hall closet, they see Ted's legs starting to disappear up into the attic, and they yank him back down. Clip three.
I wasn't going to do anything, I swear.
Amanda, call the police.
Forget the police. I think I want to take care of this pervert myself.
Oh, I'm supposed to feel this is wrong, but I don't.
Yeah. Interesting music choice. And you know what's interesting? Like, Locklear is good enough at this that it's like, this is maybe a little bit out of character, but she does sort of imply, maybe it's just because this situation comes up again, that there's some working through some daddy shit with this.
Yeah.
Not that he touched her inappropriately, but just like having control over a criminal element that.
Right.
Or any element that, I don't know, it's nice work, better than this show deserves, probably.
Well, especially since it's better than, like, you know, it's not mentioned in the next episode at all that this happened. Like, her storyline moves on to be about something completely different. I mean, spoiler.
Did they just put him in the dumpster and that was that? With, like, a note to LAPD? When you're done with Rampart, if you could just come pick this up.
Seriously. Bye. Anyway, after the commercial, apparently hours have passed and Ted is tied up pathetically by the fireplace. And even Joe seems to think that he has had enough and they should turn him over to the cops. Amanda's pretty sure the police are going to let him go, which may be true. Joe guesses he probably has a record, which may also be true. But Amanda says he's sick, so he probably is angry enough about getting caught that he will come back and do something worse. And Ted himself unwisely pipes up at this point on his own behalf. Clip four.
This is stupid. I didn't touch you. I didn't hurt you.
Yes, you did. You invaded my privacy.
Hal, you kidnapped me. I'm the one who should call the cops.
Oh, and how are you going to do that, Ted? It looks to me like you can't even move. Pretty ironic, don't you think? This time you're the one who's completely defenseless. Think I'm crazy, don't you? Who knows? You might be right.
I do appreciate that the show has him say, I didn't touch you, and her say, that doesn't mean you didn't hurt me. Because that's a good point to make.
Yeah, it is.
All right.
Also, voyeurs escalate.
Right. I mean, I think that was the point that Joe was trying to make. Like, this is probably not the only time he's done it or the only time he's been arrested, which is likely.
True.
Anyway, that's where we leave this scene for now. But when we come back, if Joe was trying to de-escalate, she's doing a bad job because she tells Amanda about the holes that she found, plus a negligee of Amanda's that was up in the attic. Ooh, and knife in hand. Amanda asks Ted what he saw, and he readily tells her he saw lots of her in the shower and in bed with Jake, and basically dares her to kill him or call the cops because he's sick of her martyr routine. And Joe would also like to know what Amanda plans to do, so she monologues for a little bit in clip five.
I have been sitting here all night trying to figure out what would make me feel better. Seeing this pig dead would be a plus, but I'm not about to give up my life for his. I thought about jail, but it's just so ordinary. I mean, prisons are full of perverts, and we probably just make friends.
You're crazy.
Yes, but I'll tell the court it was only temporary.
Amanda.
Stay out of this, Joe. What I decided is this. Ted's crime is looking, so Ted's punishment should be that he can't look anymore.
What are you gonna do?
Blind you, of course.
you. No, don't, please.
Not exactly how you picture us together, is it?
Please, I'm sorry if I hurt you, okay? I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Please.
God, you're pathetic. All the cops now.
Pretty rough.
Yeah.
I wonder if this storyline had come like later in the run and if it had gone on for more episodes, if they would have actually like had her do it and tried to have her come back from that. Cause I wonder if they might have given it a shot.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I don't know. Joe was just let off for manslaughter. Like,
yeah.
Does the show not remember that? Because I think they don't. I think they also may have forgotten she's supposed to be pregnant.
Yeah. It's a great point.
And then the show just forgets this. I did appreciate that this wrapped up, mm-hmm. like that it got to the point of her realizing what was going on with Dispatch, because yes. these kinds of storylines are not actually that interesting in the lead up.
Mm-hmm.
But this was very abrupt. Like, I understand why, but guys, come on.
Yeah. I mean, it does feel like possibly there was an idea of having it prolonged more, but then there was other stuff they had to get to with her before the finale.
Yeah, I think so.
It couldn't. But we will get to that in the next episode. For now, we have to move on to our B plot. Allison falls for her most inappropriate older guy yet. Oh, Eeyore. Every time. So Billy is on his way out to work when he opens the door to Jake, who had arranged himself in a pissy pose in anticipation of being in Billy's eyeline. Billy pouts that he's not in the mood for a fight, but Jake just came to get his fishing gear. Billy returns it and tries to make small talk, but Jake is in no mood. When Billy hands over the tackle box, he suggests that maybe they could go back to some spot where Jake is going together sometime. And Jake is noncommittal about that possibility and leaves, but, you know, less unpleasantly than when he arrived. And when Allison comes out, Billy tells her he thinks they made up, which she is happy to hear. She says she'll be late that night due to a client meeting. Billy complains that this is happening again, but only briefly. And that night, Jane at Shooters, where else, is bitching to Amanda about the trials of running her own business. Clip 6.
The reason I started my own business was to have more creative freedom. But so far, all it's been is administration. Accounting, distributors, personnel. I couldn't sleep last night because I had to fire a clerk. Welcome to big business.
What? A clerk now? I mean, first she's complaining that, like, okay, this is legit. Like, you start your own business because you want to do the thing that you're good at. And then you do that, if you're lucky, 15% of the time on any given day, I would say. Mm-hmm. We both know this is true, or all three of us. But, like, she has clerks?
Yeah.
She has, like, shipping and distribution of her designs?
Yeah.
Her? Also, didn't we just have a reference to her cooking the books and now we're just going to forget? Like, maybe you'd have less administrative stuff to do if you weren't defrauding people? I don't know.
Yeah.
Guess the show forgot about that. Like, did they just get a whole new writer's room and they're like, here's the character briefs, good luck. And then there's all this stuff that these people just don't remember happened. It wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, I think this was just she had to be in the episode, so they gave her this to do. But I mean,
yeah,
also,
but still,
like,
welcome to big business.
I know.
Her?
To what business?
Like, to big what?
No.
Yeah, very no.
I also suspect that it was not all it's been in the script, Josie. Dumb shit.
All it's been.
Anyway.
Ugh.
I never thought I would say this, but thank God Billy interrupts whatever that was to ask about Allison's alleged client meeting. But this is the first that Amanda has heard of it. Not that it takes her any time at all to turn the question to her advantage. Apparently just for sport in clip 7.
Hope she's not up to her old tricks.
What's that supposed to mean?
You know, lying to you about where she's been when she's with another man.
Say what you mean, Amanda. Jesus.
Yeah.
Spit it out.
Yeah. Like, she's not trying to get back with Billy. This is just shit stirring for the sake of it. And, like, you know what? I respect it.
Yeah. And she's an expert. And she's basically doing it, like, with a sparkly riding crop. And then she's like, and you're dismissed. I don't know. I love her.
Yep. She's the best. And, of course, as we know, where Allison is at her appointment with Dr. Miller, weirdly sitting on the same side of his desk, like...
Why?
Socially distanced apart before that was a thing. So strange.
What is with therapy sitting in the Starverse? Like, what's next? They're on one of those like S-shaped conversation couches. They're on one of those zero gravity tables with their feet in the air. Like, I don't like moon boots. I don't understand what these writers think.
They're
on a roller coaster. I don't understand.
It's really strange. I mean, it's going to get stranger, but yeah, it's really weird that like none of the actors and none of the production staff is in therapy. Like no one came to the set and is like, this is not how it is, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, Dr. Miller knows she's sick of talking about her nightmares, but he needs to understand more about them so he can figure out what's triggering them, and then changes the subject. Is she sexually active? And at first, she acts like this is a totally crazy question for a therapist to ask a woman in her 20s who would have presumably told him by now that she is engaged and living with her fiancé, but then says she was sexually active before the nightmares started, which, like, wasn't she on sex hiatus until the wedding before that even? But whatever. That's forgotten as well. So he goes on. Clip 8.
Do you miss it? Do you miss the intimacy? Being close physically to someone?
Someone? You mean Billy?
To anyone.
Him?
Yes, I miss being close.
When you feel the most satisfaction, are you pleasing your lover or is your lover pleasing you?
I'm sorry. I don't understand what this has to do with my nightmares.
Allison, I know these are difficult questions, but I'm here to help you, not to judge you.
I guess I feel the best when I'm pleasing someone else.
That's good, Allison. That's a great start.
I understand why he's asking these questions, but
do you miss it? It's Billy. Yeah. Also, barf. Also, I don't. You had to know that it was going to go in this direction.
Yeah.
If the issue is nightmares, like. Maybe just be like, I don't feel comfortable with a male therapist. I don't know.
Yeah.
I've never had a male therapist.
Mm. Yeah, I would not care for it. I don't even have a male family doctor.
Yeah. No, it's just not for me. Like, no judgment, but it's weird.
Yeah. Actually, come to think of it.
He seems to have something in his eye in this scene. Or maybe he's just like baffled by how someone this whiny managed to get engaged, but I don't know.
I'm now thinking about it. I also don't have a male dentist and have never had a male like personal trainer and generally don't have male masseuses either. Anyway, this is not about me. Back to Allison, who says she doesn't look like she thinks this is a great start, nor is she thrilled when he goes on to say he would like to see her 3 times a week. And explains that she is making progress, which they should continue. But she says evening sessions are a problem for her because she still hasn't told Billy and she works full time. So he offers to give up his lunches for her. And she thinks that would be great. Like, what? Don't his other clients work? This seems really crazy to me. You know, like, obviously, presumably they would all also have jobs. I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah, I don't. Like, by whatever, this isn't about me either, but my therapist's first appointment of the day is me at 3.
Yeah.
People work.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Whatever. Allison comes home to a suspicious Billy who pointedly mentions all the overtime she's been putting in lately. she says she told him she had an appointment, and he reminds her that actually she said it was a client meeting and how Amanda dimed her out, and finally just comes out and asks where she was, so she tells him. And she starts to say she thought it would be easier if she, and he interrupts to say, lied about it, which, as we'll recall, she actually didn't. She tried to tell him that she wanted to go into therapy, and he poo-pooed the idea. And when she challenges him on his apparent anti-shrink bias, he denies that he has a problem with psychiatrists or their patients, but he and Allison are supposed to be a team, and he wonders what kind of future they're going to have if she can't tell him the truth. I mean, sure, but that's half on you, because she tried. You were like, no, so, you know, I guess she kind of gave her no choice. I don't know. You're both idiots.
Yeah. That's kind of where I came down, that it was like, you're both wrong. Oh, right. Who cares?
Exactly. So at the next session, apparently at lunchtime, as promised, even though now Billy knows. So this really is an imposition on Dr. Miller, by the way. He brings up her having said that she gets sexual satisfaction from pleasing her lovers. And she gets all bashful and says it's weird doing this in daylight. She hasn't eaten. She has a headache. And he says there's no law that they have to have their session in the office. Oh, boy, teacher's going to let Allison have therapy outside. But actually, he suggests going to the marina for some fresh air and seafood, which seems like a mess of blurred boundaries to me. But Allison is into it because she already wanted to date this dude. And cut to Allison and her shrink, basically on a lunch date. Clip 9.
You look different in daylight.
Really? How so?
I don't know. Without all those psychology books and framed degrees hanging around, you look
normal.
Like a real person.
You know, it's always interesting working with a beautiful patient. For some women, beauty creates its own set of problems.
Don't tell me you're referring to me.
Allison, you know you're attractive, don't you?
I don't know.
Allison, it's okay to be beautiful. It's also okay for me to notice that you are beautiful.
Thank you. It's always been hard for me to accept a compliment.
You're uncomfortable.
No.
We're all uncomfortable.
No. I'm fine, really. You have a way of making me feel like I'm the only person here. The only person you care about.
Well, right now you are the only person I care about.
This is extremely unfair. You know so much about me. When do I get to know something about you?
You have my phone number and my address. That's all you need.
Okay. I'll just have to guess. Let's see. You're married. With kids, because you look like you'd be a good father. And you used to play tennis, but you gave it up because...
Okay. This is not therapy. This is just flirting on a date.
Like, yeah.
What? I don't know.
You're uncomfortable. Yeah, I'm uncomfortable. My insurance doesn't cover Chardonnay and Denver halibut or whatever the fuck. Dover sole. It is A. B, this is not... I don't get to know anything about you. No, you don't. That's the therapeutic relationship.
Exactly.
You're never supposed to see him in the light. You're supposed to think he's a vampire.
Right.
That's the fucking point of it. Boundaries.
Yeah. He doesn't exist outside of his office. He doesn't have a life. He doesn't have any relationships outside of whatever he says to you. He's not a person. He's a function in your life.
Yeah.
Anyway, where they cut it off
actually... talking about this to my own therapist and laughing about it because I've been with her for 20 years. No idea where she lives. I don't know anything about her.
Nice.
I know her name. I know where to mail the checks. That's it.
Yep.
It works.
You were laughing about it over your, you know, seafood lunch, right?
Yeah.
That you were having with her in the marina?
You know, remotely because it's fun.
Ugh. I mean, you could have both been eating a tuna sandwich, I suppose. I don't know.
That's true. We could have been.
Anyway, the reason that Allison cut herself off in the middle of a sentence is because that's when she sees Amanda walk in. And Amanda heads straight for Allison's table and brightly says she had no idea this restaurant was so popular for lunch meetings. Allison makes introductions, saying Amanda is her boss, and Dr. Miller just says he's Dan, obviously not volunteering the nature of his relationship to Allison. And when Amanda's moved on, Allison indicates that she doesn't have enough disposable income to get into her relationship to Amanda with him, which is kind of funny. Yeah. And he says that she was wrong. He still plays tennis, and he's very single. And in my notes, I just have, bruh, like, guy, you are not doing this right.
No.
Even I know that at all.
No.
And the way we can tell is that in bed that night, Allison is not having a nightmare. She's dreaming of herself standing on a beach as the waves roll in, wearing the dumbest, like, white, pure maxi pad commercial, like, diaphanous nightgown.
God. How does she, even in a sex dream about Felicity's dad, she's still dressed like a fundamentalist Mormon?
I was so glad you caught that picture, because in my notes, I also have, she's not even cool in her dreams, like, same wavelength completely.
Oh, my God.
Anyway.
Why? Courtney Thorne-Smith is so pretty.
She
is. A cute figure.
Mm-hmm.
But just, like Eeyore in every possible way, including in her own dreams with this, like, schmata that she's wearing. It's so bad.
Yeah. So Dr. Miller comes up behind her, puts his hands on her shoulders, starts kissing her neck and dancing with her in circles like they're in a Cialis commercial, and then clip him.
Oh, doctor.
What?
Not sexy.
No.
Not sexy.
He told you his name. Just, I mean, not even in your dream. You're not going to say it. It's like, girl, anyway.
I mean, don't you want to, doesn't your subconscious want to do some slutty nurse thing?
Seriously.
Switch it up a little?
So she wakes herself up in shock and then has to pretend to Billy like she didn't just have a G-rated sex dream. And he tries to get something going sex-wise, but she actually physically pushes him away, which is also kind of funny. The next morning, Amanda runs into Billy in the courtyard and asks if he ever found Allison. He says he did and everything's fine. Amanda's relieved because she just doesn't want him to get hurt again. And it's just that Allison lied to him. And then also Amanda just saw her out for lunch with another dude. And Billy's like, whatever. But then in the very next scene, he's walking into Dr. Miller's office alone, which seems super duper inappropriate even before he starts making accusations, which he does pretty much immediately. Clip 11.
What do you do when your fiancé's psychiatrist is coming on tour?
What's this about, Mr. Campbell?
Well, it's really very simple. See, my fiancé's been having some problems, so she decided she needed professional help. Now she's lying to me and avoiding me and sharing intimate lunches with this so-called doctor. Call me crazy, but I think the guy's a quack. What do you think?
I think your fiancé's name is Allison Parker.
Bingo.
I'm not at liberty to discuss Allison's case with you, but I apologize if you've misunderstood her treatment.
Treatment? So what do you do with your tough cases? What, do you take them to Club Med?
If you'll calm down, I'll be happy to discuss my procedures with you.
I'm not going to discuss the time of day with you, Miller. Allison is the most important person in my life, all right? We've been through hell and back together. You have no idea how much I love her, no idea. Personally, I think you're full of crap. She thinks you have some kind of magic cure. I'm not going to take that away from her. I don't know what you're up to. But I swear, if you do anything to hurt her.
You've made your point, Mr. Campbell.
Ooh! I mean, Andrew Shue's version of threatening is more like annoyed.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Like he has a stone in his shoe. Like, he is really trying. I know we bag on him a lot, but, like, I think he's doing the best he can. Just his best is like a C.
Yes. Yeah.
That was a good line about Clipbit, though.
It was.
Well played, writers.
But his line reading on, you have no idea how much I love her. No idea. It's like, wow, you don't want it. No one wants to take that again. Totally flat.
I know. Okay. Just off camera, Thorne-Smith is like, give me something.
Seriously. Anyway, so the next day, Allison's interrogating Billy's story about suddenly going up north to fish with Jake and asking if it's because she lied to him. And he tries to ignore her, but finally reports what Amanda told him about the big marina lunch and then adds that he went to see Dr. Miller, and Allison is horrified and for once is not, you know, overreacting. He claims he's not jealous of Dr. Miller. He's worried about her. But if she thinks that Dr. Miller's helping her, Billy will have to trust that she's doing the right thing. And then he leaves for the night. And I was like, okay, she's going to go fuck Dr. Miller. That doesn't happen. At her next appointment, again, during the day, but casual. So I guess it's on a Saturday. I don't know. Anyway, Allison asks what happened when Billy went to Dr. Miller's office. And he tells her that Billy accused him of coming on to her. And she asks if he isn't. And when he says, no, I'm not, and starts to explain, she interrupts to argue about it. Clip 12.
Can we stop the psychobabble for a minute? You are coming on to me. Every conversation we have is about sex. You do things for me I know you don't do for your other patients. Lunch appointments? You know everything I'm thinking. You know about my feelings for you. You even know that I dream about you.
We've discussed that.
Right. Dreams aren't literal. What about the rest of it? All the personal questions.
Allison, it's my job to ask questions. It's my job to find out as much about you as I can.
Are you saying you don't have feelings for me?
Not on a personal level, no.
Okay. I mean, she's right in a way that he does, that he's been doing things for her that he doesn't do for his other patients, even though she asked him to. Like, he could say no, that is true. But for her to be like, what about all your personal questions? Like, bitch, it's therapy. Like, what did you think it was going to be? How dumb are you?
Also, like, can we stop the psychobabble? No. We totally can't. It's the only tissue separating him from an ethics lawsuit.
Seriously, like, this isn't, he's not a chiropractor. Like, what do you expect him to do? Seriously. Anyway, I want to believe that he doesn't actually, he isn't coming on to her, but as previously stated, like, he is giving her mixed signals. Like, she's not wrong to be questioning him about, like, no, seriously, what are your intentions?
Well, and now it's like he's gaslighting not just her but us,
right,
for questioning him when he's, yes, the one being deeply inappropriate. And this, yep, is like some fucking Keith Raniere shit that he's doing. Mm-hmm. To be like, your transference is totally normal, while he's like unbuttoning his pants, and that doesn't, yeah, go anywhere.
Yeah,
spoiler. Mm. But it's like, he's a creep and unethical. This is not proper behavior.
Yeah,
he'd be sanctioned.
Well, somehow this convinces Allison that Billy was right and therapy was a bad idea. But as she's leaving, Dr. Miller asks if she's pushing him away because he doesn't love her. And that's clip 13.
Is it? You've done it before. And you're doing it right now with me and with Billy, aren't you?
Yes. But Billy loves me.
Because you want him to. You want men to fall in love with you.
Doesn't everybody want to be in love?
Most people do. But you're not in love, Allison, and you haven't been since Billy made a commitment to marry you.
That is not true. I love Billy.
But you know it won't last. Because when someone falls in love with you, you hurt them. And from what you told me, sometimes you hurt them a lot.
I know. I don't know why. I did it to Keith and to Steve. Now Billy.
Why do you hurt them, Allison? Why do you hurt people that want to love you?
To Keith? How did he get into this conversation?
Yeah, who? Like,
what? Yeah. He was a stalker. Like, that's not what went wrong with the two,
yeah,
of you.
No, Keith was mentally ill and had a lot of problems. That's not what happened. I mean, I understand why they're trying to create a like thread here.
Yeah.
And given what they have to work with, this is relatively skilled way, mm-hmm, of doing it.
Yeah.
But no. Like, Steve was just whatever, Steve.
Yeah. And I miss Steve.
It's Billy.
Yeah. Yeah. You know it's not going to last with Billy. Yeah, it's Billy. You met him. Like, that should be the end of the conversation.
Where'd you get your degree, Doc? Hamilton Law?
Nice. Finally, our A plot. Michael uses Sydney's new hustle to his professional advantage. Michael is having a chill breakfast on the deck at the beach house, which is the kind of vibes I support 5,000,000%. And leafing through Lauren's little black book out of idle curiosity, which I also support because gossip, when he happens upon the name of his boss and sometime nemesis, Levin, along with the note that Levin's kink is playing cowboy. The take that Thomas Calabro does is he's holding a piece of toast and then he drops it, which I just, it's gorgeous. It's such a subtle thing. I love it so much.
Oh,
he can't believe it. Immediately gets on the phone that is out on the deck with him to call the number in the book, whereupon he cracks up because it is the very same Levin that he knows. And Sydney comes out to scold him for messing with her actual business, and he giddily explains his discovery. He, of course, does not say anything to Levin. He just, as soon as he realizes it's the same guy, he hangs up. So Sydney orders Michael to forget it, but obviously he can promise no such thing and explains why this is such a big deal. Clip 14.
Levin parades around like a damn saint. And he's always looking down his nose at me like I'm some kind of moral pariah. Okay, I'm no pope, but I'm not out playing rodeo roundup with some cheesy hooker. No offense. So, this is great. Who's this Ingrid?
You can't use this, Michael. That book's confidential.
Oh, of course it is.
This is my business. My whole reputation is based on discretion.
Well, that's part of it.
I mean it, Michael. We are finally making a lot of money. Don't screw this up. If you say one word to Levin or anyone...
Calm down, calm down. You think I want to kill the golden goose?
I mean, okay, I love that. Like, when he's like, no offense, she pulls this face that's like, well, I'm not cheesy, so it's fine, which was, I mean, waiting for president, obviously. But this is like typical of the show at this point that they're just sort of like, there's so much hand waving that I almost admire it. Like, we're just supposed to assume that this character who is fairly inept at life on every level, like can't maintain relationships, had to blackmail Michael into marrying her, is still wearing white tights, just seamlessly took over Lauren's business and has the acumen and like emotional self-control to do this particular line of work. Right. And I just don't like the show just expects us to buy into that. And it's so not credible that it's like, but it's all basically happening off screen pretty much. So, okay.
No, it's true. I mean, it's especially when you think about like what Lauren did to recruit Sydney, like it's impossible to imagine Sydney being able to do that to anyone else.
Yeah.
Like she just does not have that gift. You know, she's very manipulative, but not in that way, not in the way that is required.
And but she's not, I mean, Lauren, I can buy like enforcing some shit. Sydney, no way.
No, it's true. And I mean, I think they get away with it some because the idea is like, it's just a plug and play situation where it's just like, well, you're just administrating it basically. You know, you're not like building it from scratch. You're not finding new girls. But also in terms of hand waving, as you said, like it's also asking us to accept that all of the workers in the stable are like, oh, Sydney's in charge now. The girl who was here for 2 minutes and then quit. Great. I accede to her authority. No problem. Which would they? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. They're putting Gina Gershon in charge of their satellite operation. Yeah. And then they're all moving over there.
Yes. But she was already on her way to doing Bound at that point, probably.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, exhibit A is that, you know, in a scene that I think you're about to describe, like, why is she not doing this offsite? Like, why is she having events in her home?
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Well, Bellage, girl, come on.
Seriously. So first we go to the hospital And Dr. Levin has posted the list of final candidates for chief resident. Michael is not on it. Ron, one of the guys who is on it, looms over Michael while also lording it over him. But Michael advises him not to decorate the office just yet. And then goes around the corner where Dr. Levin bitches him out about the quality of his reports of some kind or other. Who cares?
TBS reports.
Michael vaguely says he's been trying to catch up and asks if this is why he didn't make the final list, only to learn he wasn't on any long list either. He's lucky he has a job at all. And I thought he liked Michael now because Sydney was such a good partner to him. Apparently not. Anyway, Michael soulfully says the last thing he wants to do is push Dr. Levin. And the next night, Michael comes home to find, as Sarah alluded, Sydney's throwing another sexy party at the beach house. And we all see one of Lauren's clients really looks like he could be Furio from The Sopranos. I posted a pic on my Twitter when I was doing my prep for this episode. And Alan Sepinwall, who is certainly the expert, said he would have not been in L.A. at the time. He was in doing soaps in New York. But there's a couple of pictures of him in the visual aid. So you can see where I would go down that road and think, okay, maybe. We don't ever
between
get
between
like
the ponytail and the nose, the profile. Yeah. I really had to look. And then once Sepinwall was like, no, like, okay.
Yeah.
The expert has spoken.
I really tried to get a good like head on shot there. We never really do see him like full face. It's always just profile. So it's hard to tell. But if Alan says no, Alan knows.
Yeah, he does.
Anyway, Michael's not thrilled to see the house full when he would just like to relax after work, but he decides to make lemons out of lemonade and asks whether Dr. Levin's favorite sex worker, the aforementioned Ingrid, is there. Sydney points her out, adding that she charges $2,000 a pop. Michael goes straight over and asks to dance, pimping her for dirt on Dr. Levin, whom she knows as Dr. Cowboy. Come on, guys. So first thought. But while they dance and flirt, Sydney watches and seethes. And at the hospital the next day, Michael is scrubbing in for surgery with his nemesis, Ron, while Dr. Levin issues condescending last-minute instructions. And both the other docs note that Michael still looks and smells hungover. And when Ron has left, Dr. Levin calls Michael a mess and says he's letting down their patients, ordering him out of the OR. And at the door, Michael turns back around to complain that Dr. Levin's been up his ass for days and ask if this is still about Kimberly. Clip 15.
Look, I'm sorry we fell in love. I'm sorry about the accident. I'm sorry your darling prodigy didn't make it.
That's it, Mancini. I'm taking this to the medical board.
Oh, the medical board?
Spend the rest of the day saying goodbye to your colleagues. By this time tomorrow, you're fired.
Guess again, Levin. By this time tomorrow, I'll be appointed chief resident. And you'll be the one who appoints me.
Well, no happy trails joke? Come on.
Honestly, there's so many places where you could be inserting like hints, but it's almost
What's
better.
The matter? You don't like Bonanza?
Yeah. I mean, so much for not killing the golden goose, but I guess when you're backed up against it, you just have to strike out with whatever you had. And I would also note, much as I don't think that the script said all's it is so far, when Jane's line earlier, whereas Michael says here, refers to Kimberly as Levin's prodigy. I bet in the script it was probably protege.
Yeah, probably.
Anyway.
At least he didn't say progeny, which Andrew Hsu would have. They'd have had to leave it in because Andrew Hsu.
Yes, and because they were filming four other episodes at the same time and they did not have time. So the next day, Sydney comes out in a very wifey wife dress and jewelry, although Michael still says she looks like a madam. I disagree, but, you know, she scoffs that she dressed up for him and the chief resident dinner that night, but he flatly informs her she's not going. He's on the verge of getting fired, but he's going to make sure that doesn't happen. Cut to the dinner, where Dr. Levin's daughter has just finished boring everyone with a piano performance, and Ron tries to cement his position by complimenting it and Levin's wonderful family. And Levin smugly tells Ron there's nothing better than having a lovely family to come home to, and right on cue looks toward the front door and sees Michael walk in with Ingrid. And Michael outsmugs Dr. Levin immediately, heading straight for Dr. and Mrs. Levin and making introductions. Mrs. Levin brings Ingrid to the bar to get her a drink. Dr. Levin hisses at Michael about his having brought that trash into his home. And Michael cheerfully counters that she's trash today and a bucking bronco tomorrow, right, Dr. Cowboy? Dr. Levin guesses Michael wants his job back, but he doesn't. Not his old job, anyway. It's 8 p.m. Doesn't Dr. Levin have an announcement to make? So Dr. Levin takes a position in the center of the room and says normally he'd make a whole speech welcoming the new chief resident, but as Ron preens, this time Dr. Levin's just going to get right to it. It's Michael. And there are gasps around the room until Mrs. Levin collects herself and stands to start the applause going. Many gifts for this moment because everyone was really on point with their reacting to this.
This
shockery.
Was a, like, Brandon Walsh. What?
Yep.
Literally what my notes say.
Yeah, totally. So Michael comes home to Sydney, pissed off since she already heard from Ingrid. Michael pays her, thinking this makes them square, but Sydney tells him he messed with her business and calls Ingrid her employee, which I think she's technically a subcontractor, but, you know, asks who Michael thinks he is. And Michael, the smuggest he's been yet, says he's the new chief resident. He comments that blackmail works and then cracks up, remembering whom he's talking to. And Sydney finally reacts to the chief resident news and celebrates that she's married to him. And he says he can't get caught with sex workers all over the house. And Sydney cheerfully says she'll be careful, but she's not going to quit a job she likes, besides which she makes more money than he does still. And at the hospital the next day, Michael's just slid the old chief resident's nameplate out of his mail slot and replaced it with his own one. Matt comes storming in to yell at Michael about trying to buy him off with a promotion. Though, as Michael describes it, it's everything Matt would want in a job, in addition to putting him on the fast track up the corporate medical ladder. But Matt isn't going to turn it down just because it came from Michael. He's going to take it to do some good, but make sure Michael knows they're not friends and orders him to stay away from Matt. And Michael doesn't care and reminds Matt of the golden rule. If they both keep their mouths shut, they will glide to the top. And Matt makes a painted face, but, you know, there's nothing really he can do. And Sydney returns home that night in her white, low-heeled, weird pumps to find the table all set for fancy dinner. Michael thought she'd never get home. He had a great day and he thinks she's going to have a great life. And the crazy part is he owes it all to her. He gives her a glass of champagne and they toast to them. She's suspicious that this is a trick and he's about to yell at her, but he has decided to stop fighting her. He now thinks that Jane was right about them. They do belong together. They start kissing and taking each other's clothes off, which we see from the POV of someone watching from the beach. But who? Well, you're never going to believe this, but it's a totally not at all dead Kimberly Shaw. Dun, dun, dun.
What?
She's alive. Shock. Horror. That's it.
Love.
I know. God, we missed you, girl.
Squee.
She looks so good.
I know.
Let us close up the episode by naming the MVP.
I mean, I can't really say Kimberly because she's on screen for 20 seconds.
Yeah.
So, Michael.
He really got shit done. It's true.
He really did. He didn't fuck around.
I don't disagree with that. But just to mix it up, I'm going to say Amanda for not only stirring up drama between Allison and Billy, as we said, just for fun, but also for turning vigilante and, you know, possibly setting a peeping Ted on a different path of life for the betterment of all humanity. Yeah. Least valuable player.
Oh.
Peeping Ted, the pervert.
Yeah. Honorable mention to Ron. Come on, buddy.
Shut up, Ron. Yeah.
No one cares, Ron. Oh. Next time and again with this, wedding planner stuff, spinoff stuff. What else? What else? What else? Oh, yeah. The single greatest moment in TV wig history. You'll be dramatically tearing off your corneas when you check out our visual aids, which you can find for this and every other episode of Again With This on our website. That's at againwiththispodcast.com. That's also where you can find links to our very special 90210 book and to virtual events we're doing, so don't be a squeef, bookmark it today. Follow us on Twitter at AWT90210 and join our Patreon page at patreon.com/againwiththis. Any level of support gets you extra content, including close reads of Bev Niner's other projects, as outlined extensively at the top of this episode. I'm Radical New Alfresco Seafood Therapy Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Totally Deserving Chief Resident Tara Ariano, and she is on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Golden Goose David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Oh, doctor.